Well, hello again, everyone. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. It's a live afternoon call-in talk show that we do every day. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds once a month. Rich Guthrie shows up, and we talk all about birds, and we make bird noises, and it's a fun time. And Bird is Bird. I'll just call you Bird from now on. Rich is always good with an answer.
Old Bird.
Oh, good old Bird Guthrie is here. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number to call. 1-800-348-2551. Now, you can also comment on our website, wamc.org/voxpop. There's a spot where you can comment and put your question in there. You can check in on Facebook at facebook.com/wamcradio. You can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But phone calls are good. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. So you mentioned before we went on, Rich, that it's the May migration. Who's migrating and for how long?
Well, this is the peak of migration right now. Everybody's coming home.
Yep.
All those songbirds that headed to South America for the winter are winging their way back. Mostly at night, so you get a nice, clear, calm night like last night. And this morning, they're all out there singing, setting up their territories, and ready for the next nesting season.
Now, I'm surprised. At night, I mean, most of us, myself included, think nighttime is when the birds hang...
Sleep.
Yeah, hang out.
Yeah, well, not the case. For several reasons, we're not sure which one is the prime reason. Or if any of them at all, there may be others. Birds, the smaller songbirds migrate through the night darkness. Their possibilities are that it's calmer, less turbulence in the air. Then it gives them all daytime to rest up and feed because they're insect eaters and the like. So
yeah.
The bugs are more active during the day. And also they're less prone to predation during the night.
You know, I was thinking about that, maybe the hawks and things like that. But what about owls that do a lot of hunting at night?
Well, owls tend to hunt close to the ground.
Ah.
After the mice and skunks and rabbits and nighttime critters. So the hawks, the daytime migrants have to worry about hawks. The sandpipers and larger birds such as the robin will migrate during the day. And they've got to keep an eye out over their shoulder for the hawk that might be chasing them.
Right. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. Let's start it off with Kerry from Plainfield, Mass. Hi, Kerry.
Hello, guys. Hey, happy to be the first caller on the Rich and Ray show.
Oh, nice to have you here.
Anyways, I live on a pond, and, you know, it's not uncommon to see great blue herons here. Usually during the season, I'll see one or two on a shoreline. However, this week, there must have been about a dozen of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in pairs, and it seemed like they spent a lot of time flying back and forth over the pond and constantly flying up into the treetops.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if this is part of a mating ritual.
Well, it could very well be. Herons, the great blue heron in particular in our area, nests in treetops in a community. They're a communal nester, a colonial nester, where they'll find an appropriate pond with standing dead trees and build their flimsy nests right at the top of these things. And you wonder, how in the world are they going to raise a brood of herons that will be the size of the adults by the time they leave that stick nest? Mm-hmm. And right now, they ought to have really settled down. They ought to have, in fact, some of the eggs might already have hatched out. So what they're doing is probably have found a bountiful food supply, and as much as they're not liking the idea, they're sharing the food supply, frogs and other aquatic creatures, and we'll be bringing them back to the nest. I think their pair bonding is pretty well over by now. The great blue herons are pretty well settled in, established their pairship, and are now concentrating on incubating eggs and raising young.
Okay. I have one other quick question, Rich, too, okay? I was out in my rowboat, and I could hear some noise behind me, and I turned around, and it was the sound of wings. 20 feet away from me, there was an osprey,
mm-hmm.
and right on the tail of the osprey was an eagle.
Uh-huh.
Eagle that's been hanging around for quite a bit. And I didn't see any physical contact, but that eagle was right on that osprey for a couple minutes. It looked like a dogfight.
Ooh.
And, I mean, they're both large birds, and I assume they're both very aggressive birds. I was wondering, is that common for those two birds to do that? And
is it a territorial thing?
No,
if
it's
got physical. Who would win the battle?
Well, the eagle will win. And it's not that the eagle is particularly interested in the osprey itself. It wants to. It wants the food the osprey wants.
Well, I was wondering if it maybe got eggs or something like that.
Well, that's a possibility, but. And an eagle will be intolerant of an osprey too close to its nest. But on the other hand, eagles are notorious for pirating food from ospreys.
Ah.
And if an osprey is lucky enough to catch a fish, the eagle will come in and try to harass it to the point where the osprey will panic, drop the fish. The eagle will snag it and take it home.
Oh, so in other words, you're saying eagle can be a bully.
Oh, it is, very much. In fact, that's one of the reasons why, I believe it was Ben Franklin, was opposed to having the eagle as a national emblem.
He wanted a turkey, if I'm not mistaken.
That's
correct.
Right. And he just didn't like the Robert Eagle as a national emblem.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep,
you're quite welcome.
Thanks
thank
a lot
you.
For the call. We go over to Laura in Catskill. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
You're on.
I'm calling because this morning I found a robin's nest about 3 feet off the ground in a pine bush.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering how to protect it because Catskill lives up to its name, and we have many cats. I already encircled the area in a 4-foot chicken coop wire.
Oh, good for you. That's the first step that you might think of. And the next thing is, it's kind of like it's very difficult to protect a bird, a nesting bird, and especially after the eggs hatch, from the predatory cats in the neighborhood. So I would say just please be vigilant, keep an eye out, and have a squirt gun handy to discourage the cats from coming in close. Aside from that, cats are very cunning. They're very effective at what they want to do, and that is to prey upon small birds and other critters. So I think the robin is probably not in the best place right now, but it is as it is. Robins choose their nest sites, and let's hope that that this one will work out for it.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
thank you, Laura.
Good luck
great
with that.
Call.
It's kind of difficult to convey, but cats are terrible terrorists out there. They're critters.
It's nature, though, right? Right, Rich?
No, it's more. It's not. It's not really nature. It's not natural.
It's not natural for a cat to be a predator.
No, it's not natural in our area. Cats are predators, but they're not native to here. And the number of cats that we have far outnumber the carrying capacity for the species. So, and it's not that the cats need to find birds to eat. It's just that they do.
Do you think the cats have a moral problem here? Because I think it's nature, and this is what cats do. And
well, where morality comes to cats, I think there's a little vacancy.
Okay, well, we know where
well, cats have their own mind, and, they're lovable in many respects for that very nature of cats' behavior.
Okay.
However, this is one that's not dear to my heart.
What about the osprey who eat frogs? What about the poor frogs?
Well, there's enough frogs, and there's a few enough ospreys that there's an established balance between the two.
Okay.
But in an urban setting where or a suburban yard, cats are beyond the natural carrying capacity allowance.
All right. It's a numbers game for you. I understand. Mm-hmm. Nikki in Pittsfield. Nikki, you're on.
Hi. We live up in northern Berkshires. And
okay.
For the last couple years, we've lived up there for the last couple years. And we started hearing barred owls. And we'd hear one, and then we'd hear them call to each other. And then we were told they were actually calling to a fledgling. We could hear the baby kind of talking back to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard that for about, 2.5 years. And then last fall, we quit hearing owls altogether. And we go out and listen just about every night because we really kind of fell in love with the conversation of the owls. And we own 62 acres, but yet we don't hear one owl. Do you have any idea what could be happening?
No, I don't. Not off the top of my head. Barred owls, these are the ones that that are one of the more numerous owls in our area. We have the great horned owl, the barred owl, and the screech owl
mm-hmm.
that are the three predominant species. And the barred owl, one of the more delightful species it is, lives in the deep woods, wet woods, where there's water nearby, usually, but not all the time. I have been doing very well lately. I love to hear the sound of the barred owl during the night as they call back and forth and the young owls as they respond. I don't have a ready answer as to why the numbers in your neighborhood may be down. Now, the possibility is that you might have great horned owls that have moved in. Perhaps the forest has matured a little bit. The habitat has changed. And great horned owls have moved in. And they, like the eagle, are the bullies of the neighborhood. And however, they don't stop at just harassing. They'll make a meal out of a barred owl.
Mm.
And then would we hear the great horn?
You would, but they're not quite as vocal as the barred owl. The barred owl is, you know, quite a talker. The great horned owl is rather subdued, mostly heard only during a brief period between first light and last light, during the periods of early morning and late afternoon. And usually only in the early part of winter into January, February, and then occasionally through the rest of the year. But for the most part, the barred owl is way more vocal than the great horned owl.
Okay.
All right.
So that may be what's going on there. Now, you can tell, you know the sound of the great horned owl. It goes something like, hoo, 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 hoo. So
do it again, Rich. Do it again.
Okay. The great horned owl is that one that it has that pattern of five or six notes.
Yeah. Horshack from Welcome Back, Cotter. Right. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right.
Just on another note.
Yes.
I love cats.
Yes.
But we were in Australia about 5 years ago, and in Australia it's legal to shoot cats that are outside because they've destroyed the Australian bird.
So well,
I understand where you're coming from. I do love cats, but I think they belong inside because, like,
well, I agree with you there.
Naturally, they're not meant to be outside preying on our birds.
I'm not quite sure I go the Australian way, but
no.
I agree with you.
No,
keep them
neither.
Indoors.
Thank you for that happy image as we take a break here, Nikki. I appreciate
love them
the
away.
Call.
That's what you can do.
Oh
yes.
Boy, go ahead, take a break, Zach.
Support comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havokin Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts. Providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavokinWealthStrategies.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenAndPerrin.com. And SUNY Ulster, offering the Fast Finish Entrepreneurship Certificate to help build skills with business plans, QuickBooks, and more, online or on campus in as little as 6 months. SUNYUlster.edu/entrepreneur.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Birds, cats, all sorts of things. Bears as well.
Bears,
1-800-348-2551. You mentioned bears.
Well, yes, because they warrant attention.
All
they're
right.
Big, and they're not ferocious, but they get their way. When they want something, bears will do it.
And why precisely, knowing the answer, are you concerned with bears on a bird show?
Birds and bears, well, it's all about the bird feeders.
Ah.
So birds like bird food and bears like bear food. And they're both the same.
So put them high.
Keep them out, or not at all.
Okay. Don't put bird feeders out.
If you have bears as part of your neighborhood, then I recommend you not feed the birds.
Okay.
If you do have bears and you're insisting you really want to feed the birds, then you can put a bird feeder high enough and out of reach of the bears, keeping in mind that bears can climb trees.
So. Sure. Okay.
And and also where you store the bird seed is also important. You don't want to have it on your back porch where they can get a good whiff of it and come through the door and help themselves.
Absolutely. Okay, here's a couple from email. This is from Ed. How long does Mother Goose sit on her eggs? Thanks, Ed.
Until they hatch.
All right. Well done. Next.
Well, I will say, however, that it's not too soon. Geese eggs are already hatched out in some places, and little goslings are paddling around between mom and pop. You know, it's very interesting. I love to watch geese with their little family.
Mm-hmm.
Mom is in front, and pop is in the back, and the six or seven or eight little goslings are in between, and they all form this nice little line
yeah.
as they swim across a pond or a lake.
Okay, here's one from Rich. The subject heading, Owls in the Forest. This is from Rich. This is from Mark, excuse me. You're Rich.
Yes, okay. Yes.
All right, let's just start the whole show again.
Okay, then.
Mark says, I'm in a local band, and we're interested in filming an owl in the woods for a music video. I'm curious, what type of owls live in the upstate woods, which you've covered, and when are the best times to film them and best location? Are there any clues in the woods that would hint at owls? Love the power and mystery of birds. This is from Mark, who is in the band Titanics.
Okay, Mark, owls are here. They're tough to film, mainly because they're mainly nocturnal. Mm-hmm. So unless you've got some good nighttime equipment.
Infrared technology?
And good ways to track them and the like. So there are, however, and if you be in touch with me, I'll give you contact information off later. You can email me. I don't know what you want these owls to be doing, but I do know of a couple of owls that are sitting on nests right now that can be viewed from a respectable distance without disturbing them. And this is important. We don't want to, for our purposes, go in there wreaking havoc on a nesting owl.
Yeah. What is a respectable distance?
To the point where they're not bothered by your being there.
So 20 feet, 50 feet?
Oh, no, well beyond that. I would say 60 or more.
Okay.
And with good lenses, that should be sufficient.
Okay.
And I can find you a couple of owls if you want.
Yeah, what is your email address?
And they're just going to sit there and look at you because they don't want – they'll keep a low profile. So you might catch an image of them peeking over the top of the edge of the nest.
All right. And your email address, Rich?
It's my name, Richard P. Guthrie at gmail.com.
All right. Well, thank you for your email question, Mark, and good luck with Titanics. Let's go to Margie in Olive Ridge. Hi, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, so I've been burgled by a bear. I know how that is.
So you know the story.
I'm afraid so, yeah. What we do is we take our stuff in at night.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. You can do that.
Good
too.
Idea.
Yep.
Yeah, because during the day we don't really see the guys, but at night it's... Oh.
Okay, be mindful of spillage, too. So, you know, leftovers on the ground, that will, you know, it's not as bountiful as a daytime or as a full feeder, but, you know, they'll come rummaging around and may come back later to see if there's more.
Well, I figure they probably come around a lot, but as long as we don't have any, the guy actually broke a pole, dragged our feeder and the suet off.
That's what they do.
I just want to avoid that. But yes. I didn't call about that. I actually called about cowbirds.
Right.
We have a whole lot of cowbirds.
Yes.
And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, thank you. The cowbird is a brood parasite. Cowbirds are typically had been found in the prairies before the colonists arrived. They're reluctant to fly into a forest. They like open areas. They used to follow the buffalo herds.
Uh-huh.
And in order to keep up with the buffalo, so I'm told anyway, they would lay their eggs in somebody else's nest. And rather than, so they don't have to set up a territory and incubate the young and raise the young and teach them how to fly and eat and all that stuff. They just let somebody else do it. And so, you know, out in the prairies, I suppose the native population there could handle it. Here in the east, once we cleared the forest and brought in horses to replace the buffaloes, you know, the cowbird moved right in with us. And they continue to lay their eggs in other birds' nests. So, and you'll see song sparrows or phoebes or chipping sparrows raising, a tiny little bird raising a big cowbird.
So a song sparrow, when the egg hatches, won't say, hey, wait, what's going on here?
Yeah, right. They just simply don't recognize. It's like imprinting. You know, like the little duckling that hatches in the barnyard thinks that Farmer Jones is mama.
Yeah.
And will follow Farmer Jones around all day long. Well, the cowbird and the song sparrow, the maternal instinct in the song sparrow is raise the baby. That's no clue that this was coming.
Yeah.
So, and it's yours, oftentimes at the detriment to the host species young.
Right.
The cowbird being the bully, being bigger, being more aggressive, will take the lion's share of the meal. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
I've also heard that they can sort of knock other eggs out of the nest. Is that
yes,
true?
Yes, that's true. And also will actually lift the fledglings of other bird species out of the nest. So if you see a totally helpless a featherless fledgling bird on the ground. If you look up, there's probably a vireo nest or a warbler nest with a cowbird now occupying it.
I'll be darned. And there are a lot of cowbirds around?
There are a fair number of cowbirds. They're very prolific. What they do is, you know, it's incredible. I mean, you have to hand it to them. It's quite a trick. If you're going to be a cowbird, if you're going to be a bird, being a cowbird is quite the success
story.
Not
ethical, but a good trick.
Well, to us, it works for them, so their ethics are a different formula.
Ah, well, you didn't say that about cats, did you, Rich?
Cats don't need that, though.
Okay.
Cats can do well inside the house and be happy family companions. Cowbirds will not do well.
Well, Margie, I'm sorry you had to be party to this argument.
I was just wondering, I often, if I see a bunch of cowbirds at the feeder, I actually go out and I scare them away.
Good for you.
Is that something I should be doing?
Yeah, but, you know, it's an exercise in futility, but I'm glad you do it. I do the same thing.
All right. I feel terrible about it because they are birds, and they have a really cool song.
Oh,
Rich can do that. Go ahead, Rich.
I can't, really.
No?
But I can. What do you call it?
Hum a few bars, you'll fake it. All right.
Mnemonica? They go something like gleek, gleek, gleek.
Yes, that's it. It's like a gleek, gleek, gleek.
Oh, yeah, you.
This is great.
Marge,
this
you're good.
This is my favorite part of the show. Margie, thanks a lot.
Well, thank you.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Bill in Niskayuna. Bill, you're up.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So
Sure. My
question is probably not really what I think it is, but I'll just ask it the way I wanted to ask it.
Right. Ask away. And the answer may not be what you think it is either. So.
Exactly. So there was this young man, I think it was in April, and he was in North Carolina probably, and he set some world record for the highest note ever whistled.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a B7.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a B7, yeah. And I wanted to know, is this high relative to how high birds can sing?
No.
It's about 3,950 hertz. So what have you got for birds?
Birds can go way up over that, up to 7, uh-huh. 8, even 10.
Wow.
Yes. Beyond our hearing range.
Well, we can hear 10.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. I've been called into an office. I got to go.
All right, Bill.
Okay, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Well, we can hear up. You know, even at our advanced age, we could probably hear, 15?
Maybe you can. But there are birds. For example, the winter wren, which in England is simply called the wren. Because they only have one wren there. Mm. We have a whole plethora of wren species, which is interesting in that our winter wren, is probably the only bird to colonize west to east. That is,
it's not common?
No.
Wow.
Everything else came to us from somewhere else.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
This is the only family of birds that have started here in the Americas and have spread over to Eurasia. And the wren is the individual in that realm. Now, the wren sings a song that seems to be two parts, interrupted by a gap. And in that gap is a series of ultra-high frequency notes that we just simply can't hear. And it was Arthur Allen of Cornell University that analyzed this with sonograms. Well, they didn't have sonograms back, but with recordings.
Slow them down, obviously.
Slowed them down. And one of the most remarkable sounds is to hear the song of the winter wren slowed down to, let's say, a quarter speed.
Yeah.
Oh, musical, beautiful.
What does it sound like?
Oh, it's first of all, it's deep and rather guttural, like it's going to. Let me see if I could whistle it up. But that at normal speed is.
Oh, neat. Yeah. Wild. Let's go to Ray in Great Barrington. Hi, Ray, you're up. Hello? Ray, are you there? Are you there?
Hello? Not Ray.
Another satisfied customer. Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Lynn, you're up.
Yes.
What's going on?
Hello, Ray.
Oh,
hello, Rich.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Are cowbirds protected?
Say it again?
Are cowbirds protected?
Are they protected species? The answer is yes. Well, because we have an international treaty that protects all migratory birds, except under certain circumstances and usually around agricultural activities. The cowbird is a member of the blackbird family, the North American blackbirds, and by its family relation, comes under the protection of the International Migratory Bird Treaty Act. So, yep, they are protected.
Okay.
Very interesting. I've lost my bluebirds this year. I never had bluebirds before, but they've gone south, I guess.
Bluebirds, yeah.
In the valley. But they went in April. And now I've got the orioles, which I've never had before, because I've been hanging out oranges and in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I keep them? Can I keep them here?
So well, the orioles like oranges?
The orioles like oranges, yes.
Wow.
This is a trick that folks to the south will use to attract orioles to their yard. Well, they have an advantage down there. They have lots of oranges. You know, up here, they're kind of expensive. But orioles, if they have learned to find food at sliced oranges, are good eating down south. So that you have one that has been educated someplace, maybe in Florida or Texas. And I say, good for you. Now, they will likely hang around. They nest up in tall trees. And that exposure to your feeder via the oranges is probably the only pathway that you'll have to keep them there. Other than their own inclination to like your yard and nest in the tall trees. So there's not much else you can do other than to hope and cheer them on and be nice to them.
But they'll eat other things, right?
Oh, their main diet up here is way other things. They're mainly insect eaters, but they'll eat fruit from when they cherries or June berries are ripened. They'll eat flower buds.
Apples, maybe?
Apples? Crab apples, even?
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
All right. Great call, Lynn.
One more question.
Sure.
Thank you, Ray. Little one. Do a horned owl.
Oh, do the you got a request. Oh. Do the horned owl.
Encore.
Do a horned owl and then do a barred owl.
Oh, we have requests now.
Thank you, Lynn. I appreciate
this. Absolutely.
Okay. We'll do it in that order. The great horned owl goes set like this. Ho, 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 ho. Ho, 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 ho. And the barred owl, now this is the fun one.
Okay.
Because this is the one that, you know, great horned owls usually don't respond. Now, maybe it's me, but whatever. But barred owls will talk to you. They'll go like this.
Well,
excuse me. That was very perfect.
Well, Lynn, thanks a lot for that, and I appreciate you.
I'm so sorry I said that.
No, I really like it. I like that when you can elicit.
Rich does that.
Me too. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call.
Not sure how the owls feel about it. But.
Well, if they're listening, we'll get a call, I'm sure. William in Montgomery. William, you're up.
Good afternoon. I have two bird sightings I'd like to share with you.
Sure.
Both occurred on Pleasure Lake, which is in the Catskill Mountains.
Okay.
And the first one was I was fishing by this small island, and a bald eagle landed in a tree near me and sat there for probably a half hour. And I didn't, you know, my presence didn't disturb it.
Mm-hmm.
It flew from the tree, went down into the water, and picked up a fish, a large fish.
Mm-hmm.
And it was trying to get back to the island, and I'm saying, like, it's not going to make it. Well, it finally got maybe 15 yards from the island and hit the water. And I'm thinking, like, you know, what's going to happen? It floated, like, more buoyant than a duck.
Mm-hmm.
And did not let go of the fish, and finally turned itself around using its wings, and paddled itself to the shore using its wings, and then drug the fish up the bank.
Wow.
And ate it.
Tenacious eagle. That's what I like. Good spirit for
that
eagle.
That's amazing. That's a great story.
Yes.
And the other story is fishing almost the same spot. There was another island, and I was watching. I picked up a hummingbird flying across the lake.
Picked up.
And a blue jay left the island, I think, thinking the hummingbird was a large insect, and went after the hummingbird. And once the hummingbird realized that it was being attacked, it went on the offensive. And, like, chase this blue jay right off the lake.
Spunky little.
Wow.
That's, you know, you ought to bottle that water from that lake there.
Well, thank you for taking my call, Ray. I love your show.
Hey, William, thank you very much. Is that common?
No, but hummingbirds are very aggressive. And despite their size, they can hold their own.
That was a blue jay or blue bird?
Blue jay. So, more than likely. Blue bird, pay no attention
blue
to
blue jays are fairly aggressive.
They are, and they probably would go after a hummingbird, as he suggested.
It would go after a hummingbird moth, but not an actual hummingbird?
Well, either or both.
Yeah?
Yeah, sure. So the hummingbird got the message and took charge.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take one more. We'll take one more call, and then we'll take a break. Steve in Saugerty. Steve, you're on.
Hi. We have, second year in a row, we have birds building a nest in our covered gutters. We had the nest removed last year. Mm-hmm. This is a bird. I'm not sure what it is. It's got dark gray with speckled back, a yellowish bill.
Yes.
And we're wondering, we'll have the nest removed again. We're wondering what we can do short of just screening everything off to keep them away next year.
Well, what it sounds like is that you have starlings nesting there. They will do that quite often. They will adapt to nesting in buildings, in scuppers or vacancies or voids like that in a building. And yeah, go ahead and remove the nest. Do it soon before they, you know, before they have a chance to lay their eggs. And
yeah, that's what the people who did it last time.
Yeah, and then you'll have to screen it off to keep them out. That's what they like to do.
I thought so. Thank you very much.
Okay, yeah, then, Steve.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the call. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back with more of your calls, more bird sounds. I got the horn down now. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Is that right? Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Yeah, you might be drawing a bunch of seals up the river, too.
Fine. All right, we'll take a break.
Support comes from Kingsway Communities, Schenectady, New York, announcing an open house today until 5 p.m., offering a continuum of care and services for seniors, caring in the family tradition. 518-393-8800. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Unison Arts New Pulse, presenting Sound Bath, An Evening with Peter Blum, Steve Gorn, Naz Hosseini, and Thomas Workman. May 10th at 8, unisonarts.org. And Union Graduate College, offering an MBA in healthcare management. Now online, the power of an MBA, the passion of healthcare. UnionGraduateCollege.edu.
Zach, the engineer, is looking at me. I was just going to listen to Sonny Rollins for about 20 minutes, but no? All right, so tell you what. Here's one from email. This is from Gail in Old Chatham. In the 70s, when passing through the Adirondacks, it was a big deal to see a raven. Now, 40 years later, that is all I see here in my corner of the town of Chatham, between the Ooms Conservation Area and the Alan DeVoe Bird Club. In fact, I never see crows except in the village. Is this a trend? Should we expect the raven population to grow?
Yes.
Why?
Yes.
Why?
Why?
Yes.
Ravens are doing very well. And I agree. I remember back in the 70s, I was traveling in the Adirondacks with a group of guys. There were four of us in the car. One of them was a lawyer, one an engineer, another one an economist.
Yeah.
An engineer set economist
up to a joke.
Walked into a bar.
Yeah.
Right. We're driving down the highway, and I'm driving. I see a raven coming at us from down along the road, which they do. They patrol the road looking for roadkill. And I stopped the car, and I had everybody get out and watch this raven fly overhead. That was how spectacular it was. And they are critters. I love them. Since then, Gail, as Gail noted, they have moved in in numbers. Now they're doing very well throughout the listening area. They just happen to be very adaptive. Why they had been vacant for so long is beyond me. But back since the 70s, their numbers have increased. Now they're nesting not only in the high elevations, which was typical at the early days, they're down in the river valley. There's one nesting on a river, on a bridge, over one of the creeks on the Hudson River.
Yeah.
And there's another pair nesting somewhere near our Coxsackie Grasslands Preserve down again in the river valley. So they've done well. They've moved in. Not a bad thing. Ravens are good people.
Okay, let's go to Bill on the thruway, who was stopped on the thruway. Bill, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
You're on.
Go ahead.
My question is about mourning doves. I love their song. I always remember even hearing it as a kid. It interested me. I noticed when I go to Florida, the mourning doves appear to be the same mourning doves, but they have a very different call. you know, around here they have the...
Excellent job, yeah.
But down south, it's more of a... But they appear to be the same bird. Can birds have different dialects?
Birds, great question, Bill.
And birds do have dialects. You know, one of the birds that just returned, I saw my first one this morning from their winter quarters down south, is the common yellowthroat. The yellowthroat is found throughout North America for the most part. And their song, while similar across the country, is different enough that they have these dialects. In fact, the white-crowned sparrow in California, where you have mountain regions and valleys and separate populations of white-crowned sparrows that don't intermingle, have their own little village song that they sing. A knowledgeable birder observer will recognize it as, gee, that sounds like a white-crowned sparrow, but, and it is a white-crowned sparrow, but. Now, with the mourning doves, yeah, there's probably some variation in their song, but also in Florida, there's two other doves that are fairly common. That might also be contenders for a similar sounding song. And that would be the white winged dove and the Eurasian collared dove.
Hmm.
And both of those sound very much like mourning doves. And they, you know, on first glance, you could recognize them as a dove, but they do sound different enough to distinguish them.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Hey, Bill, and nice work on the impressions.
Absolutely.
Very, very good. Let's go to Rob in Glenville. Rob, you're on.
Thank you. We have a great horned owl in woods near us, and every day between the hours of like 3 and 5, a bunch of crows torment her. Is that like a normal behavior?
Yes, it is. Great horned owls and crows do not get along. If that owl is going to have to find himself a better hiding place, which is what they do, which is why they like conifers, pine trees, as cover during the day. And once the crows find them, well, they're pretty relentless when it comes to harassing them. And there's not a heck of a lot the owl can do. You know, he can fly to another tree, but it's not going to elude the crows. So, yeah, crows and owls don't get along. And it's pretty good reason for that. If owls feeding at night, if they come upon a crow, that's fair game. And the crows seem to have seem to know that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, oh, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Before I forget, wanted to let everybody know about the Lockbox, which is now open for business. And basically the premise of the whole thing is we fill the Lockbox before the fund drive, which, by the way, is early next month. We fill it up. We shorten the fund drive. Last time we did this, it was a 4-day fund drive, and it was great. So we have a challenge on the table this time around. Mr. Big, it's an anonymous person known as Mr. Big, mm-hmm. That's the code name, has put up $25,000 on the table. If we can hit the 325 mark. So basically we had $125,000 in the lockbox. He said, you got to make $200,000. I'll give you 25 more. So if we do that, the fund drive will be a lot shorter. So I encourage you to go to WAMC.org, look for the picture of the lockbox, make your pledge, and there's some cool stuff you can get as well. Let's go over to Ray in Great Barrington. Ray, we lost you before, and now you're on.
Hi. First of all, cats are the worst invasive species.
I see. Okay. What's your question?
And they should all be declawed.
I see. All right.
But this question is about hummingbirds.
Okay.
A ruby-throated hummingbird flying to a white pine, leaving, flying out of sight and coming back into the tree repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
I never noticed it carrying anything as nest building, but do they nest in conifers?
Yes, they do, Ray. And if you're watching a ruby-throated hummingbird and recognize it as the ruby throat, then it's likely the male. And
Right. The
males don't do the nest building. He's got your attention while the female is out there putting the nest together.
Gotcha. I'll be darned.
Yep.
Okay, and declaw those cats. It's not cruel.
Okay.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. Let's go over to Wayne in Lennox. Hi, Wayne. You're on.
Hey, you. Thanks for taking my call. My question regards cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a cardinal the past year and a half, and it goes to our living room window, sits on our mirror in the car, flies into the window in the garage, goes to the family room, and goes to the cellar and pecks. And this happens on a daily basis for the last year and a half. My question is, what is the lifespan of the cardinal, and when can I expect this cardinal to cease to exist?
To give it up, huh? Okay.
And second, can it pass its DNA onto the offspring?
Well, to the osprey? The offspring.
That would be a strange Dr. Moreau situation.
A red fish hawk.
Yeah, we don't need to go there. All right, fine.
Okay. Wayne, what's happening is, as you probably surmise, is the cardinal is defending its territory against its own self. It doesn't know that the other thing is its own self. It just sees another cardinal. Well, if you're lucky, this cardinal can live to 8 years, 10 years.
Oh, boy.
However, that's
depending
not
on how many
usually,
windows you have. Obviously,
that's not usually the case. You know, this once a songbird reaches maturity, for the most part, they will live 4 to 5 years, and that's really getting on.
Hmm.
This guy will probably continue this for a while, and you know, unless he's lucky and lives a long, healthy life, then he'll be around for a little while longer. Now, no, the behavior will not be transmitted to the young, other than it is a natural instinct amongst songbirds, especially things like the cardinal, to react to an image. So if you get another male cardinal that sets up territory in your yard and he happens to see his reflection in a mirror on a window, he'll be back.
Now, this is the female cardinal that does this.
Okay. Females, with cardinals especially, yeah, they can be that way too. They're very... female aggression is known to be out there as well. So
okay, well, I'll give you a call in 5 years and let you know how we made out as far as the...
Tell her to go back and take care of those babies back at the nest. You can do some things to obscure the image on those things. On the mirror on the car, you put a paper bag over it for a while. The window, you can put some window cleaner on there, you know, the white waxy stuff.
Yeah.
That will come off, and you'll have a nice sparkling window in a few weeks from now when you take it off.
So you're saying if I do it for a period of time, that it may stop that behavior?
Yes, it might feel it won the little skirmish there, the territorial skirmish, and go on to the serious business of raising young.
All right.
Okay, thank you for... Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Let's go to Ed in Lake Katrine. Ed, you're on.
Hi. I looked out our kitchen window, and I saw a bird I have never seen before, and I'm thinking it might have been some kind of grosbeak.
Okay.
But here's the description. It had a black head, had black and white wings. It had a bright red crest under its throat, like a triangle.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And it had beak, looked like a grosbeak.
Yes. Check your book and look at rose-breasted grosbeak.
Oh.
And they are just returning. And what's interesting about them, they're what we call neotropical migrants. They'll come back this time of year, raise their young in our neighborhoods, and then head back south come next autumn. The thing about rose-breasted grosbeaks and also indigo buntings, curious thing about both of those, a tiny little bluebird, all blue except the female is just plain brown, is that they will come to a bird feeder when they first return in the spring and then disappear. They go off into the woods to raise their young.
Ah.
A few lucky people will have the grosbeak family return to their feeder through the season. But most folks see them for a few days, and then that's it. That's it till next year.
So I was lucky to see one.
Yes, you caught it right in time.
Excellent. Yep. Ed, thank you.
Thanks.
Bye now. Sue in Woodstock. Sue, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Sue Lipkin. Sue from Woodstock. You just answered my question.
Well, there you go, Sue. That was easy.
We had the rose-breasted grosbeak, the male, then the female came for 2 days, and now they're gone.
Ah.
And that happens every spring.
Well, I like when this happens, when, it just happens to be the previous phone call.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Do you have a follow-up question?
Do I have any other questions?
Yeah. While you're here.
Well, yeah. Let's see. Well, we also saw yesterday. I was going crazy with the binoculars, and I also saw the. I thought it was a gold crown sparrow, but no such luck.
Well,
they're not here.
Right, they're not here.
Oh my God, we have an anomaly! It's a gold crown sparrow. No, it was a white-breasted sparrow.
A white-throated sparrow.
Throated sparrow. That's
yes,
it, yeah.
With a yellow, little golden yellow spot right on the top near the top of the head.
Oh, it was so vibrant, the yellow.
Yes,
was incredible.
That's this time of year. That's a little trademark.
Yeah.
And they probably nest near you in Woodstock, in the higher elevations of the Catskills and the Berkshires and the Green Mountains, a white-throated sparrow.
Yeah, thank you. They're really gorgeous.
You're quite welcome.
Okay, well, thank you so much for answering my question, the previous caller.
Sue, thanks a lot for the call. We go over to Mike in Saratoga. Mike, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick comment that we live in downtown Saratoga Springs.
Yeah.
And this year I've got repeatedly northern flickers coming back into our yard. That's not really my question. My question is, we also have a birdhouse on the fence, and we have had once in like the 15 years been up, birds went in there. But is there anything I can do, or is it too late, first of all? And the second part, if it's not too late, is there anything I can do to encourage birds to move into it?
Well, first let me ask, have you looked inside? Is everything inside okay, inside that nest box?
Yeah, I looked in the beginning of the season. I cleared out in case sometimes, wasps will take,
right.
Bees will go in there. But I cleared it out, made sure there was nobody in there.
Okay. And the next thing is what type of habitat you have in your yard that might be attractive to the birds. That's the next key feature. And if the habitat's not right, well, it ain't going to work. But if you can put the combination of features together, you should have luck with either bluebirds or wrens or even sparrows that might move in there and nest.
Yeah, we had wrens in there 1 year, like 2 years ago.
Okay.
So it's not too late in the season.
To that question, no, it is not. You can still do it. And I encourage folks who have not yet put out a nest box, if they have the opportunity, to go ahead and do that.
As long as there's no bears.
Well, nest boxes and bears, not a problem.
Really?
Really, yeah. Raccoons, a different story, but, you don't have to worry about the raccoons.
Well, Mike, thank you very much. Let's go to Adriana in Massachusetts. You're on.
Hello.
Take me to William Call. I got a problem with a magnolia tree that's being eaten by squirrels.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
And what kind of tree? Magnolia?
Star magnolia.
Star magnolia.
And it's in my yard. It's right next to my feeders. So what can I do to discourage these little devils?
Let me see. If you put squirrels are little devils. They're cunning little features.
Yeah.
Creatures
really
that they have fun. They're fun to watch. They are destructive. I presume these are gray squirrels. Is that right?
Yes.
The star magnolia ought to have flowered by now.
Has a few.
Has a few, and otherwise in bud.
The rest of them are not blooming at all this year.
Oh,
here.
Got them all.
They ate them all.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the only thing I could suggest is somehow find a way to keep the squirrel from getting up the tree, and that's not easy because squirrels love trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't think of a simple way of doing it.
Now,
I'm going to research that and see if I can come up with a trick for you, presumably for next year.
Thank you.
All right. Well,
we're going to work on that, and Ray will next time. We'll see if we have something because it's too late for this year. All the buds are gone, the flowers are out, and but the buds will be forming later on during the season, and see if we can get them to stay on the tree, keep them away.
You know, and maybe try this. You know what, Adriana? Try calling during the next gardening show. Not kidding, because
yes,
Fred Breglia, who is
guys,
an arborist, is really smart about this stuff. So
that was going to be my resource.
There's no time.
Okay.
What's he on?
If I even knew what was on tomorrow, it would be a shock. But
Stay tuned.
Can check the website, wamc.org. Rich, we're out of time. How can people get in touch with you?
Oh, my email address, richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
richardpguthrie@gmail.com. Now, when's the Cuba trip? It's not right away.
Oh, Cuba. putting together a trip to Cuba. You want to go? We're going next.
No, I don't.
Early next spring, as our birds are beginning to return from Cuba, we're going on a nature bird science trip to Cuba.
Good. We will talk more about that next month when you're here. Rich Guthrie, the Honest Wait Food Co-op is one of our underwriters today. The Honest Wait Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWait.coop. Pine Cobble School, Williamstown, Massachusetts, where science, art, and English classes take place outside on the 20-acre campus. A good beginning never ends. PineCobble.org. And Downtown Schenectady Improvement Corporation announcing the 2014 Merchant Mashup. Restaurants and shops unite and sample potato recipes during the Spud Challenge, May 15th, 5 to 8 p.m. DowntownSchenectady.com for information. Thanks to our own Spud Challenge, Zach Malloy, who was our at the controls today, our engineer. Well done. Thanks to Dina for answering the calls, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Check out our new app. Go to WAMC.org. You learn more. You download it. It's a lot of fun. Stay tuned for the news.